This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. Time now for the Outdoorsman Radio Show with your host, Alan Ellis.
Hey, good morning. We're back. We're back here with, what's your name again? E.W. Grimes, president of the Maryland Quality Deer Management Association, and Barry Harden, who is the vice president. We were talking a little bit about their banquet when we left, and we're asking you for questions. If you have any questions about anything, fishing, hunting, and great outdoors, wildlife, you're certainly welcome to call. We're not going to stop you from calling. We're just having a conversation here, and telling folks about some of the General Assembly legislation that has transpired. If you're just joining us, we've got the Governor's Gun Bill, Senate Bill 281, passed out of committee the other day in a legislative circus late at night on Thursday night. And we've gotten some emails on that in the past couple days, somebody who's followed the testimony and actually heard that how that travesty occurred. But the gun people have actually been shocked as far as their response to this, because they thought that they had some more votes on their side, but it turned out that the committee voted 7-4 against. 7-4 against us, the citizens of Maryland, and for the governor's gun bill. So, you know, and I said earlier in the last hour, if you write to your lawmaker, your delegate, or your senator, make sure you're registered to vote, because they do check. You know, they'll take a sample. If they get 1,000 emails, they'll take 200, 250 emails out and run it through the voter database. And guess what? If you're not a registered voter, that automatically discounts your opinion, and it also discounts, you know, the opinions of the rest of the folks that wrote in, because they apply that statute. So if, you know, they compare 200 emails out of 1,000 and 100 of them aren't registered to vote, they're going to look at that 1,000 and say, well, half these people, 50% of them, you know, these letters are meaningless. And that's what they do, and they have the access to do it, and that's how they make judgment calls. So if you are opposed to a bill, or if you're in favor of a bill, you need to let your legislator in your district know how you feel. Delegate Brochen the other day, Delegate Zirkin, Senator Zirkin. These guys apparently didn't hear enough from their constituents here in Baltimore County. And if they're your guys, guess what? They voted to suppress your Second Amendment rights. So, just saying. 410 WCBM 680, 410-922-6680 is our phone number. If you'd like to call in and tell us about your deer season, the numbers are down. We're down less than 90,000 deer, 87,000 some deer. Some of the counties were off by 20-some percent. Some of the counties were off, you know, less than that. Were there any counties that were actually up?
One antlered county was up. And that was Montgomery County, and that was the antler kill.
The antler deer kill in Montgomery County.
Yeah, 4.2%.
So they're after more bucks down there, and I can understand that. Yeah, Montgomery County's quite a county. A lot of nice deer in Montgomery County, and a lot of those public parks are managed very well
absolutely
in Montgomery County under Bill Hamilton.
And then also in Howard County with Phil Norman, they've done some pretty outstanding and probably going on close to 16, 17 years of deer management on some of the parks.
I don't know if it's quite that long. I think it's 13, 12
yeah, okay.
or 13.
Well,
but,
yeah.
I mean, I've been doing that program since 2000, I think. So
yeah.
I think I got in the second year of the program. So you're probably pretty
yeah.
close, yeah. But
yeah.
they've done some great job. They're doing some great work out there.
Yes,
that's for
absolutely.
Sure. Yep. So,
you know, the good thing about this this report that just came out, and we'll have it posted on our website, too, or at least a link to go to it, the first part of the week. When we get our webmaster out from being a publicity hound on the radio station.
Yeah, I know.
But, you know, hunters and deer managers, I'm going to call them the same because they are.
Yeah.
You know, you want to look at what's going on in your area, and this they break it down by county.
Yeah.
So you can really see what's going on in your county. But keep in mind that numbers for a year aren't as good as having a couple years in line. You see how your trends are going. And that's why Brian, actually, when they put these reports together, combined.
Brian Eiler.
The percentages of change from one year to the next. And that kind of gives you an idea of where you're. Where your data is going. So, but if you live in Carroll County, you want to see Carroll County, you want to live in Cecil County, it breaks it down antler to antlerless. So you get an idea where you're going, your county, where you're hunting at.
Yeah. Now, let me ask you a question. You have your finger on the pulse of the deer hunters around the state, probably more so than I do. The question that I get asked a fair amount of time is about EHD.
CWD or EHD?
EHD. CWD, yeah. Chronic Wasting Disease. We've only had one case in Maryland of that. I'm talking about EHD, Epizootic Hemorrhagic Disease. Some people give it the name blue tongue, but it's basically inflicted by the bite of a little no-see-um midge, and primarily occurs during a year when you have a wet spring and a dry summer, which we had in 2012.
Right.
And the deer tend to concentrate around the water holes, which is where the no-see-ums are. They bite the deer become infected. The infection goes to the deer's lungs. It gives them a high fever. It swells up their face. And deer...
That's where it swells their tongue, and the tongue turns blue.
Well,
that's
yeah.
Where that's where they
that's
get
where
the blue tongue.
Yeah, and, well, exactly. And I think it's the mortality is somewhere about 70%.
Yeah, some of the... it's pretty devastating, and the good thing and the bad thing about this is that down south they've had this for quite a while. It's been slowly, seems like it's slowly working up our way. Climate change, whatever, I don't know. But the bottom line is, a lot of times as hunters, we'll harvest a doe or even a buck, and if you look at their toenails, I'm gonna call them toenails, on their hoofs, and they look like they're cracked or shedding.
Yep.
That's a survivor. That's actually a survivor. And the good thing about that is that deer will pass its antibodies on to its offspring.
Yep.
And so our impact, as big as it was a couple years ago,
yep.
One of the good things about having it is that antibodies will eventually help out with that.
So. Exactly. And those deer are survivors are, like you said, they pass the genetics on. There are not a lot of those out there, maybe one out of three, one out of four deer. Mm-hmm. And like I said, the survival rate is maybe 30 out of 100.
Yeah, and also one of the telltale signs, and you said about the fever, that's why you find these carcasses near water.
Yeah.
They're trying to cool down from the fever.
Yeah.
And that's what that's what's devastating about that.
And many of our listeners may have, that watch the Outdoor Channel, may have seen Michael Waddell.
Yes.
Do the show along the Powder, or is it the Milk River?
Milk River
in Montana. Where they were finding carcasses floating and along the
yes.
river out there, and we have that to a smaller degree here. We have pockets of it,
yes.
And some years, 2007 was particularly devastating, and that could have an effect on the final deer numbers too. So who knows? Because
yep.
We don't find them all, and they don't report them all, and
that's
if they
correct.
Do report them all, they can't because of the short staff can't go out and investigate them all. So
that's correct.
It is what it is. Unfortunately. All right. I need to tell the folks about some other banquets that are coming up, not just QDMA. There are some good fundraisers out there, including one coming up on Sunday, one coming up this Friday night, and that's the National Wild Turkey Federation, the Central Maryland chapter. That's their annual hunting heritage and banquet and art auction Friday, March 1st at 6 to 11 at Michael's 8th Avenue in Glen Burnie. The phone number to call is 421-1930. If you like information and tickets, somebody there can help you out. Central Maryland Chapter NWTF.com is the website. Central Maryland Chapter NWTF. That stands for National Wild Turkey Federation. .com. If you'd like to attend that banquet, that's always a good time. Quite a few people in the room there at the at Michael's in Glen Burnie. Also, the 20th Annual Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation Banquet, Auction and Banquet, that's Sunday, March 3rd. And that is at the Ten Oaks Ballroom in Clarksville, Maryland. And this will be my fourth or fifth year there. I'm the this will be my third year's Master of Ceremony. So Master of Ceremonies at that event. So we'd like you to come to that as well. Chuck Reel is our contact at 301-633-2776. And that's 301-633-2776. And that's the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, Baltimore, Maryland chapter. Always a good time. A lot of firearms, wildlife prints, fishing and hunting equipment, jewelry, Wyoming elk hunt, a South African safari, and other hunts are going to be up for grabs there. It's all about conservation. It's all about helping out the species. And Rocky Mountain Elk's a good conservation organization, not only here in Maryland but around the country. QDM is 25th anniversary, right?
Yep.
25th anniversary. How long have you been with them, EW?
See, it seems like forever because I actually was practicing the QDM philosophy way before I even knew there was a QDM. So the reality of it, I've been here in Maryland for 8 years. I actually started with the Mason-Dixon branch in PA as being one of the branch officers up there for 4 years prior to that. So I've been affiliated with them for quite a while.
Mm-hmm. I got you. I remember when you moved into Maryland, that's for sure. The state's never been the same since.
I hope not. I hope we make a difference. You know, the thing about QDMA is you know, we're not coming in as being a whole source of supply of knowledge and all like that, which we tend to educate and use that as a tool. But what QDMA has done nationally and why it has exploded is it actually has bridged the conversations between the regular hunter and wildlife biologists.
Yep.
So now you can actually talk at the level, you know. I know we was when I first started, I was kind of intimidated by the professional biologists that were kind of, you know, you have that tendency to look down your nose at you kind of thing. And what QDMA has actually done is bridge that gap, and that's why they've been so successful.
Sure.
Nationwide. I mean,
sure.
We're in Canada now, in Mexico, New Zealand.
Yeah.
I mean, it's turned into a national organization just because of bridging that gap of knowledge.
Headquarters is in Georgia.
In Georgia, yep. Bogart,
yep. Yep. And I know the marketing media guy, the publicity guy is
Lindsay.
Yeah.
Thomas
Jr.
Yep.
And his father, Lindsay Sr., was actually a congressman from Georgia. And very, very involved in the agriculture community there in Georgia. He was actually a member of the board of the Congressional Sportsman's Foundation when I was there. And I got to meet Mr. Thomas, a great guy. Did not meet his son, but I like Mr. Thomas, really good guy. And if, you know, his son's anything like his father, good people there. And, of course, you got Kip Adams and as the president and some other folks.
He's a Northeast Regional Director.
Right.
Kip is born and raised in PA. He's basically a local guy, not even though he's from PA. And Kip really keeps his outreach. He's outreach director and as well, and he really keeps his finger on you. You call Kip, and within hours, you have a response.
I know he's responded to the article that came out in the Cumberland Times up there by my buddy Mike Sawyers about the House Bill 990, the antler restriction bill up there, and set the record straight on that a little bit. Here's a story we got. We got an email from our buddy John from Pennsylvania about eating roadkill and different roadkill regulations and things like that. But here's a story we heard here on WCBM yesterday. I did some research on it. This came from the sources, Louisiana Sportsman. Deer meat donated to the Shreveport shelter was destroyed by state health inspectors. Is there anyone as upset as I am over the destruction of good venison that was donated to the poor and homeless? This is from KEEL Radio website in Shreveport. Hundreds of pounds of meat donated to Shreveport shelter has been destroyed by health inspectors, and many want to know why. According to KTBS, deer hunters donated more than 1,500 pounds of venison to the Shreveport Rescue Mission, which the Bellevue Meat Processing Plant in Houghton handled and packaged properly before delivering it to the mission. However, state health inspectors showed up at the mission last month and found the meat in the refrigerators. They promptly took all the meat, threw it in the dumpsters, and poured bleach on it to make sure it was destroyed and not served to residents of the mission. It will cost more than $8,000 to replace the meat. Many are asking why the meat was destroyed. Game meat is not regulated by the USDA and is therefore not allowed to be sold in local stores or donated for distribution to the public. Game meat is not regulated by the USDA here in Maryland either. However, we do have a donation program here in Maryland called Farmers and Hunters Feeding the Hungry. And their requirement, not the state requirement, but their facilities that are partners with FHFH, Farmers and Hunters Feeding the Hungry, are inspected by FHFH and found to be clean and in good working order. And a lot of venison gets donated to our food through our Maryland Food Bank and to the various entities of that program. I know back in the early 90s when I started Hunter's Harvest Share, the first venison donation program here in Maryland, we had 80 different agencies that we worked with through the Maryland Food Bank, and it was all types of shelters. And you know what? People like venison.
That's good stuff.
They love venison. I know.
It's
you
good
live
stuff.
On it. I know.
Yeah.
You live on it. You know, and I enjoy venison tremendously, but the Louisiana sportsmen, I mean, the folks in Louisiana have some splaining to do why they would do this. These are people in shelters that don't have any protein or way to get it.
And bringing up a speed a little bit, I think it was last year, I think the Hunters and Farmers Feeding the Hungry actually, I think they had a total of somewhere around 60 tons of deer venison that was actually donated throughout the 1 year. Now, them numbers fluctuate up and down a little bit, but that's awesome. That's over a million meals.
That's right.
To people that wouldn't have got the meals. I mean, that's the bottom line. I mean,
exactly
there's
right.
That's a resource,
Well, they had actually had gotten some funding from the general funds last year to help that program, which was a great shot in the arm to them, and they've been able to extend the program now to even accept crop damage deer permits.
That's correct.
And we have that in the Maryland Hunting Quarterly. We have a number of processors around the state who are accepting crop damage permits, and there are people who do crop damage permits this time of year in particular, trying to protect that crop before the fawns are born and taking out those does. And you just got to be a little careful. You don't take out a shed head buck, but most of us do. So just wanted to bring that up along those lines. So where do we go from here, guys?
I was hoping we'd have some phone calls come in so we could comment on what, have some people interacting here.
Well, see, that's what I thought we'd do, too. Why don't we take a break? Why don't we open up the phone lines, 410-922-6680, 1-800-922-6680. If you have any questions about deer management on your property, the deer kill numbers that just came out showing about an 11% decrease, give us your reasons for why you don't think we saw the deer this year, why we got the deer this year that we have been trending actually right around 100,000 deer for the last couple of years. And the guys, Barry Harden and E.W. Grimes from QDMA, Maryland QDMA, will try to answer those questions, and we'll check in with you, too. Oh, I did want to bring this up before the break. The folks at Buck Bomb bought four tickets for, as I said, mother, son, people who wouldn't normally be able to purchase a $70 couple's ticket to go to the banquet. We'll offer those to our listeners here for the next couple weeks, and we have three of them left. We have already donated one to one of our listeners, and if anybody is in a situation where they would like to go to Westminster and attend the banquet on the 16th of March at the VFW on Poole Road, and you have a situation like that, you know of a situation like that in your neighborhood and your family where the young person is interested in hunting and needs a mentor and needs some help, and you're stepping up to be that person, maybe the family can't afford to go to something like that, I would highly recommend they come to this banquet and get to meet people in the hunting world. And good crowd, you got a great crowd of people up there. All the guys I've rubbed shoulders with for the most part are good guys, and we'll make those tickets available to people in that situation. You can email me with your situation if you'd like, Ellis@ellisoutdoors.com, or you can call us here if you like. We're going to take a break, and Alice in Catonsville, hang on the line. We'll get right to your call as soon as we're done with the break. Time for me to tell you about Clyde Sports Shop, 2307 Hammonds Ferry Road in Lansdowne, just off Beltway Exit number 9. Their phone number is 410-242-6108. You know, they're ready for fishing season. I mean, perch are running, perch are spawning, yellow perch are out there. These guys at Clyde Sports Shop have the bait. They've got the fishing hotline. Tell you what, why don't we just do this? Let me take this line. We'll do this as part of their commercial. We'll see if the fishing hotline's up and running. Can you bring that up?
Can you bring up line 4?
Okay.
Here is the latest fishing information from Clyde Sporting Goods. Loch Raven, crappies, perch, minnows best bait. Liberty Resort and Nicodemus Road Bridge, crappies, some walleyes have been caught, minnows best bait. Centennial Lake, crappies, plenty of bluegills, some bass, minnows, wax worms.
Sounds like a crappy fishing report.
We got to figure out a way to do that with deer.
Yellow perch, bluegills, minnows, and wax worms, best feed. Fall trout have been stocked. Elbow Road ponds, perch, some rockfish, minnows, best feed. Severn and Magatee.
I think you get the point. That's the fishing hotline from Clyde Sports Shop, 247-FISH, 247-3474. They're geared up for fishing season, and you can too. The website is clydesports.com. Please visit the website or stop by and visit them. Tell them you heard about it on the Outdoors and Radio Show. They're at 2307 Hammonds Ferry Road in Lansdowne, just off Beltway Exit 9, 410-242-6108. Clyde Sports Shop. Been around since 1957, serving fishermen and hunters across the state of Maryland at their same location at in Lansdowne, 2307 Hammonds Ferry Road.
The following is a paid announcement.
Governor O'Malley wants to enact laws that burden the right of self-defense for the law-abiding citizen. These restrictions will deny rights to those least able to afford them. The governor openly admits he wants to tax a civil right and make it a profit center for Maryland. The governor proposes laws that violate American values. His laws will not target criminals. His laws will only convert the lawful into criminals. The governor's penalties against law-abiding people will cause the loss of jobs, security clearances, and could even stop you from getting a mortgage. The governor's laws will subject active duty service members to prison time if they cannot register their firearms while serving overseas. They will subject young hunters to prison time for possessing common hunting ammunition. And you'll risk prison for not knowing to register a hunting firearm that the state previously approved you to own. Gun control helps no one. This message brought to you by Maryland Citizens. Learn more at MarylandShallIssue.org.
This is Alan Ellis for Linex Spray-On Bedliners. Bay Linex of Glen Burnie and Catonsville Linex are proud to provide outstanding customer service just like their number one rated Linex Spray-On Bedliners with a nationwide lifetime warranty. A Linex Spray-On Bedliner completely seals out water, meaning no rust. It has a durable non-slip surface and is impervious to fuels and harsh chemicals, deer blood, crab juice, and it protects against impact and abrasion from tree stands, tools, and all the other junk you carry in your truck bed. It's easy to clean at the local car wash. Bay Linex of Glen Burnie and Catonsville Linex now offer the new Linex Premium that looks better and lasts longer. Bay Linex of Glen Burnie, located at 400 Arundel Corporation Road, just off Beltway Exit 3A. Call 410-789-0199. That's 410-789-0199. And Catonsville Linex is located at 5617 Baltimore National Pike, inside Beltway Exit 15A. Call 410-455-0800. That's 410-455-0800. Protect your investment, your pickup truck, like I did with a Linex Spray-On Bedliner. W&W Tire and Auto Service in Finksburg is taking care of my trucks for over 25 years. Anything from a simple oil change to extensive engine work, brakes, tune-ups, everything, their motto is, we do it. Bridgestone and Firestone tires for pickups, SUVs, and commercial vehicles. Large trucks, motorhomes, even diesel engines are no problem. W&W Tire and Auto Service on Route 140, 3233 Baltimore Boulevard in Finksburg. Look for the big American flag. Call for an appointment, 410-833-8410. W&W Tire and Auto.
This is the Wall Street Journal Report. I'm Marcy Norton. What is a view worth? In the real estate world, a lot. A lake, ocean, or mountain view can boost a home site's value from 10 to 50%. Obstruction of views can wipe out tens of thousands, even hundreds of thousands of dollars in value. Homeowners have little recourse to reclaim their obstructed views unless local ordinances offer view protection or procedures to resolve disputes. Absent city guidelines, property owners are allowed to use their property as they wish, including for planting tall trees. If you are in the market for a home with a view or already have one, there are steps you should take to protect yourself. Don't assume that vacant land won't eventually be developed. Take pictures of your home's views and file the photos away in case they're needed later to demonstrate their loss due to obstruction. Ask if your community has a view restoration or view resolution program that establishes procedures for resolving view disputes. I'm Marcy Norton with the Wall Street Journal.
All right, Flo, so the key to safe pest removal is staying calm.
Okay.
Says here this lady's got a badger in her attic.
Oh, I love badgers. Oh, sorry. Calm. Here he is! Come here, little buddy. I thought he wanted a hug.
Badgers don't really hug.
Not yet. Oh, badger.
Insuring your business vehicles with Progressive is like having Flo on the road with you. Low down payments, great discounts, and flexible billing options. Now that's Progressive. Visit Progressive.com today. United Financial Casualty Company and Affiliates.
If you have gout, listen closely. That's the sound of gout silently attacking joints between flares. You won't hear it, and you may not feel it, but if your uric acid level remains high, crystals can continue to build up in your joints. Over time, this may lead to attacks in other joints, constant pain, and joint destruction. So don't wait. For more information, go to goutinfo.com and talk with your doctor about ways to keep your uric acid at a lower...
Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
But I'll take down your fishing pole and meet me at the fishing hole. We may not get about all day, but don't you rush away. What a great place to rest your bones, and mighty fine for skipping stones. You feel fresh as a lemonade sitting in the shade.
All right, here we go. Let's talk to Alice in Catonsville, and then we'll talk to Charles in Baltimore. Good morning, Alice. How are you doing?
Well, fine, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. What's going on?
Well, I've got a little boy here who's 7 years old. His name is Ben, and he is going to be a Cub Scout soon.
Wow.
He's going to learn all about all kinds of great skills, and he's going to do BBs, and he's going to do archery at Cub Scout Day Camp, and he's very excited.
Very good. Does Ben want to talk on the radio?
Ben, you want to say hello?
Mm-hmm.
Hi, Ben.
Hi.
Are you excited about joining the Cub Scouts?
Yes.
What do you go in as your first level of Cub Scouts?
Yellow.
Yellow? Is there an animal associated with that?
Maybe.
Yeah. Are you? You're not a wolf or a cub or a, I mean, well, you're a Cub Scout, but I mean.
He'll probably go in as a wolf.
A wolf. That's what I thought. The wolf was the first level.
Do tigers, but he's not doing tigers.
Ah, okay. So you're going to be a wolf, Ben.
Oh.
Yeah, you're going to be a big predator. What do you think?
Mm-hmm.
I like it. Do you like to eat elk every day like natural wolves do?
No.
No? Oh, I'm just kidding you about that. But
he wanted to tell you about some fish that he learned about at school.
Really? Go ahead, Ben. Tell me about the fish.
I heard about an owl wife.
Owl wife. Okay.
And a perch.
Yeah.
And a mackerel.
A mackerel. Very cool. So what did they tell you about the owl wife? Did they tell you that we have those in the Chesapeake Bay?
Yeah.
Yeah? Okay, good. That's good. They're also known as menhaden, M-E-N-H-A-D-E-N, menhaden. And they're also known in certain parts of the Mid-Atlantic as bunker. So you've got the same fish that has three names. What do you think of that? Yeah, that'd be like you having a name Ben, which is your real name, and then having another name like Fred, and then having another name like Bill. But it's all the same guy. Isn't that crazy?
I do have three names, too.
Do you? What are you? I bet you do. So.
Why does the fish have three names like that?
True.
Why is that? Ask him.
Why do the fish
have three names?
Yeah.
Well, different people throughout history have named those fish for what they're known as in their region. It's called a colloquialism, and I don't expect you to remember that word. But we have ducks here in Maryland that are actually scientific name, or their common name is scaup, S-C-A-U-P. But people on the Eastern Shore call them blackheads. Some people call them bluebills. Some people call them river ducks. It all depends on what region of the country or what region of the state you're in, and that's why they call them different names. They have the same animal has a different name, you know, in different parts of the country.
Okay.
That's like a cougar and a mountain lion are the same animal.
Puma.
And a puma, all the same. Yeah, puma, a cougar, and a mountain lion are all the same animal. Isn't that crazy?
And my dad is taking me fishing, too.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Well, good. You got some good fishing down in your area. Centennial Lake is a really good place to go fishing right down there near you around Columbia. It's a real good place. So that's easy access and a nice place to go.
So, seriously?
Yep. Okay?
Okay.
Thanks, Ben.
Thank you for talking with him.
Thanks, Alice. You take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
There she goes. 410 WCBM 680, 410-922-6680. Let's talk to Charles in Baltimore. Good morning, Charles. How are you?
Good morning. I've been listening to your diatribe on no-see-ums, and I have a whole file on no-see-ums. They have a multiple different names.
Yep.
People call them all kinds of things.
Midges and, yep, sure.
And I wrote Florida because that was my first experience about 20 years ago. And they sent me a volume of every bug that lives in Florida, and even all the troubles with their waters. They have a red water down there.
Red tides, yes.
Yeah, that's mm-hmm. there. And my St. Bernard, who has passed away, developed sores on himself. And I took him to the vet, and he says, this is from a pathological no-see-ums. And he had to be treated with cortisone
yep.
and all kinds of drugs to get rid of this. And I thought I was going to lose him because of these sores that he had mm-hmm. all over his body.
The no-see-um, people don't know, is like a tiny version of a mosquito. I mean, they'll
yeah.
bite you, and they'll suck the blood out of you, and they'll fill up. You know, their belly will fill up just like a mosquito does. And along those lines, of course, a mosquito injects a chemical into your bloodstream to keep your blood from coagulating while it's sucking your blood. And a no-see-um does much the same thing. Along with that, though, there are chemicals in there that can cause fever, just like this hemorrhagic disease that we're talking about.
Well, the University of Florida told me that these no-see-ums are migrating. They really came from the Midwest, and they got into Florida. And you cannot, when I was there, you could not walk through any tall grass. You would get them. And they would bite you, and the itching is terrible.
Kind of like chiggers on the Eastern
That's
Shore.
That's right.
Wow.
They have that name.
Yeah.
At any rate, these things, I have files on them.
All right.
What the University of Florida decided to send me everything about every bug that lives in Florida. And you know mine were living in some rugs that I had on the steps. And they were living in there from year to year.
Oh, my.
And I had to get rid of that. So people should be aware of these things. And they're very, very terrible.
Oh, yeah.
They're very parasitic.
Yep, exactly.
And they carry all these diseases.
There you go. Just something else to worry about, Charles.
Yes.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you for your show.
You're the most interesting man in the world. See you, Charles. The real one. Bye-bye. 410 WCBM 680, 410-922-6680. All right. Now, what did you want to talk about, EW? Would you want to break down more deer numbers?
Yeah, what we did, and we do it every year. I do it every year. We'll take these numbers from DNR, including the deer, annual deer report, and break them down by region. I mean, Brian and those guys, Brian Island and those guys did an excellent job, and his staff, of breaking them down by county.
Yeah.
But we took these numbers and region, like Region A and Region B.
Yeah.
And because there's a lot of difference between Region A and Region
sure.
B. I mean, you got your different bag limits and
well, they're pretty much on. they've come to the almost to the conclusion that they've pretty much achieved their goal in reducing the deer herd in Region A, which was part of the plan. You know, the guys in Region A don't care for it that much. But, you know, they're trying to accomplish a management goal, and I think they're getting there. What do you think?
Well, you know, reducing the deer herd, there's a reason why they wanted to do that. And it's based on the forestation. And you never hear a whole lot about that. There's been some forestation studies and regeneration of the forests in there. You know, Western Maryland has a lot of public land.
Yes, it does.
And it's probably more public land than it is private land if you really get
right.
You know, it's a lot more of it versus the rest of the state that has some public land, but there's a lot more private land. And so you can mirror that public land effect in some of the management programs, but. There again, if you go into any of the forests up there and look at the regeneration of the white oaks and do some of that stuff, there's a reason why there's a need to reduce the deer herd.
Deer eating too much of the vegetation. There's no critters up there.
Right.
You can look. You know, you walk in and you look at eye level and you can't
a browse line,
and there's nothing below eye level up there. Deer eat everything that they can reach.
That's correct.
And there's no reforestation, as you said, which means there's no critters. There's no birds. There's no little tiny rodents. It's just like a barren wasteland because of the deer overeating everything.
You take that browse, the devastation caused by browse, and Pennsylvania did an excellent job with fencing in these areas. They're called deer explosions.
I've seen them.
If you've never seen that, it's unbelievable. You'll have vegetation that's 6 to 8 feet tall inside the fence,
yep.
And literally nothing on the outside.
There used to be one in you mentioned Howard County program earlier. There probably still is one of the sites is set up near a deer enclosure or exclosure or whatever you want to call it.
Yes.
And it is amazing. It looks like a lush, a jungle inside the enclosure, and you're looking around and you're going, that doesn't exist in the rest of this area because of too many deer eating too much browse. Yeah.
That's correct. That's correct. So what we do is I break these numbers down by region and I'll be putting these together and coming out with a letter in that aspect of it.
I'd be interested in seeing that.
The difference in the bag limits and where they have been and the approach. I'm going to call it the approach.
Yeah.
And the reasoning for, and that's why I bring up about the habitat.
Right, right. So. Well, next year is the year that all the stakeholders will get together, and we'll talk about regulations for the next 4 years or 2 years, I guess, as far as that's concerned. There's a lot of bills in the General Assembly right now that have to do with management, and as I mentioned before, the wildlife managers don't really like being. Told what to do by the politicians as far as establishing seasons and extending seasons and Sunday hunting and things like that. I mean, I'm sure that
let's clear up a little bit of something you hit there on the Sunday hunting post. Sunday hunting regulations are based off of blue laws and stuff.
I remember, sure.
And so our legislative have to do –
Right.
Have to make them amendments and do that for the Sunday hunting. The setting of the regulations for deer management and all that goes back into the biologists and that part of it. But there's a section in it. And keep in mind, ask your delegates and your elected officials how many of them hunt and how many
None
of them
get on.
Well, they need to get if they're talking for a hunter, they need to get a little bit involved. And I think that's what you've seen here in Garrett County. You've seen these guys, the people in Garrett County, say to their delegates and say, hey, what can we do? That's how these things
a lot of that happens like that. And again, you've got that juxtaposition between regulations and legislation, and you know the biologists have to base their decisions on science.
It should be.
And if some politician comes along and says, "Well, we think you ought to do this," You know, without consulting them, and it passes out of committee, goes to the floor, and everybody thinks it's a good idea. It may not be a good management idea.
Exactly.
You know, but the Sunday hunting thing, I understand that that's, you know, but we've picked away at that and picked away at that. There are, what, three counties now that still don't allow Sunday hunting?
Yeah, actually, there's only three counties in the state that don't allow.
So at this point, at this 20 point. Out of 23 do. And it's been tried and failed. There needs to be a bill introduced that says, let's turn the Sunday hunting regulation over to the Wildlife and Heritage Service and let them regulate it, and let's open up hunting to
Maryland. Keep in mind, the majority and all of,
right.
The Sunday hunting regulations are for private land.
I understand.
The private landowner should have the right to say whether they're going to hunt or not hunt on Sundays. I think this has been an ongoing, and I think it's really come around.
Well, when we had Baltimore County Delegate Pat McDonough was in here. Is he a senator? I can't remember. But Pat McDonough was, you know, he's a frequent host here on WCBM. And he was in the studio one day. I said, what's the deal with Sunday hunting in Baltimore County? He said, I hear from the anti-hunters, but I don't hear from the hunters.
That's true.
Yeah.
When the bill went through for Baltimore County a couple of years ago, I didn't find out about it until after the fact.
Right.
And this is why we really need to, as hunters, we need to organize up a little bit and get together and say, hey, look, you know, we got to start protecting our heritage. And Western Maryland has a pretty good strong.
They have a strong
group of guys up there that keep their finger on the pulse of the legislative stuff. And
they hold the politicians' feet to the fire, and they're registered to vote, which is the key.
There you go.
Let's talk to George on the Eastern Shore. Good morning, George. How you doing?
Yes, how you doing?
Good, what's up?
I was just listening to your subject there about the deer populations.
Mm-hmm.
I'm over here on the Eastern Shore. We got a farm over here, but...
you own a farm or lease a farm?
Yeah, a family farm.
Okay, good.
Yeah. I just have wondered about this for years and years and years, and I wonder why I don't understand... what goes on. I mean, I don't like politics anyway, but
right.
for the anti-hunters and all that, for the sake of the benefit of the wildlife, all the deer that are getting killed on the highways and stuff, like up my way, up 301 North,
yeah,
and then maybe over your way, like you talk about the Western Shore.
Sure.
If the deer are eating so much and there's so many deer, they're actually, I don't know if they are or not, but if they were actually starving, it's just the inhumanity of it all. You know what I'm saying? And all the deer getting killed on the road and the danger to people and stuff.
I definitely know where you're going with that. When we sat in several of the stakeholders meeting, we have anti-hunters and other groups that actually participate in that. One of the things that, you know, they're diehard against maybe the killing of the animals and all like that. But the reality of it is, if the deer are overpopulated and they're devastating to the habitat and all that, we advocate a QDMA as you know, to balance that herd with the habitat, number one. Number two is to create a healthier herd because you have limit the overpopulation part of that. And if there's some of the anti-hunter groups that listen and actually have heard our full deer say, hey, you know, they might have a way of managing the deer and actually be helpful to the deer as well.
Yep.
So, but I definitely understand where you're coming from with that. Yes.
George, here's the point of hunting. Hunters are the best wildlife managers there are. And the deer herd is managed in such a way that the hunters are able to take the surplus animals. We can take 100,000 deer out of this population every year and not touch it because the deer herd, which is estimated around, 240 now, EW, 200, that, somewhere in there, has the capacity to double every year. We're not sure what it exactly is, but that's what they tell us the numbers are. Maybe it's 250. But, you know, if we have, let's say we have 250,000 deer and we kill 100,000, that simply means that we only have 300, a potential for 300,000 next year. One doe, one buck, one doe, two fawns. That's A plus B equals four.
Yeah, but that's amazing.
That's my fuzzy math.
Not getting any better.
Huh?
The problem's not getting any better.
It's not going to get better.
And it won't get better until we actually see. I mean, we have an ongoing study that the Maryland State Chapter has been doing with DNR at these managed hunts, where we actually calculate the breeding through what we call a fetus study. And we measure up the fetus. And the reality of it is that the deer herd will double its population annually, period.
Yeah. George, let me ask you this question. How many acres do you have?
We got about 1,100 acres.
1,100 acres. Okay. So do you have any idea how many deer you have on the farm?
At times over 100.
Okay. So let's say you've got 1,100 acres. I'm going to guess you probably have, what, EW, a deer herd of...
It's hard to say.
I'm going to say, what's the average per acre? I mean, what's the average per square mile? Let's put it that way.
In a heavy timbered area, the recommendations would be 20 deer per square mile. If you get into an area where you have agriculture, and each area is significant to themselves. So,
right.
So I would say if a deer in an agriculture area, you're looking at the target zone would be around 30.
So you have 100 deer on that 1,100 acres, let's say.
Oh, yeah, and this small area,
it's
like a spot between Crumpton, Maryland, and Millington and Sudlersville.
Yeah, big deer population.
It's huge amounts of deer.
We have the Chester River branch is in Queen Anne's County, and they have a co-op there. It's over 38,000 acres. I'm sorry, 38,000 acres in different farms area. Temple Roads is actually spearheading that, and they've actually collected harvest data on the ag crops as well. And as this program actually went along, we killed bigger and better bucks, and also managed the does within the population to actually have crop yields such as corn and soybeans actually increase and do the management. So it's the philosophy, the QEM philosophy, actually has been proven right over in your neck of the woods.
So George, let me ask you this question: as far as those 1,100 acres, how much of it is how much do you permit to be hunted?
Oh, we hunt all of it. We don't hunt it heavy. I got friends that come over from Howard County just to.
Yeah.
The deer hunting stuff and
yep.
Some guys here local, but
uh-huh.
They get a few deer every year, but they just do it for pleasure. And
yeah.
What about
crop damage permits? Do you invest in those?
No, because I don't like dealing with all the government programs.
I hear you. Okay.
I don't know, because it's such a hassle.
No, I mean, so I guess where I'm going with this is if you're not managing the herd, your agriculture crops that you plant, I'm sure, are not yielding what they should.
No, I have a lot of trouble with acres being eaten up.
You're losing money, and that's what it's all about.
But yeah. That's why I'm calling you guys right now.
Well, George.
It's been a struggle.
Do you want to talk to QDMA? I mean, I'll be more than glad to hook you guys up, and if you just leave your number with our producer, we'll be more than glad to get in contact with you and offer some solutions.
Yeah.
Would you like that?
Yeah, but as far as what I'm going to do with deer this year, they got this some kind of chemical or something you spray on the crops that makes the stuff smell bad or something. I'm going to spray the whole perimeter of the edge of the field with this stuff to try to keep them out of there because they eat up several acres of corn and beans every year. They just eat it up.
Yep. All right. George, thanks for the call, and you do express a common problem that farmers express all the time. We're going to put you on hold, and Pat, our producer, will get your phone number, and somebody from QDM will be in touch with you. Okay with that?
Well, thank you very much.
All right, good.
Okay.
There goes George. Hey, it's time for the Maryland Fishing Challenge. Yep, it sure is. My buddy Art Guido down there at the Bass Pro Shop, he's from Bel Air. He caught a 30-inch tautog. I'm jealous. Off Ocean City, and he checked it in. Mel Kaplan of Lusby caught a 40-inch striped bass, caught off the clay banks, and Sean Kagan of Darnstown with a 45-inch rockfish, caught near Poplar Island in December. Now, these guys all checked their fish in the Maryland Fishing Challenge, and guess what? They're now eligible, like you can be, to win great prizes like the grand prize boat, motor, and trailer rig from Bass Pro Shop, or thousands in tackle from Bill's Outdoor Center, and prizes from sponsors like the World Fishing Network and Under Armour. From now through Labor Day, all you have to do is go fishing. If you're lucky enough to catch a Maryland citation-sized fish or crab and certify your catch, you're in. It's that easy. There are more than 60 species of fish in freshwater, the tidal rivers, the Chesapeake Bay, and on the Atlantic coast that qualify. Stop by your local fishing citation center, check your fishing rule book, or visit the website www.dnr.maryland.gov. GOV for all the details in the 2013 Maryland Fishing Challenge and the Citation Fish Program. That's www.dnr.maryland.gov. Are you feeling lucky? Hey, don't forget about our buddy Sean Mann down there on the Eastern Shore. You know, Sean is now booking trips for his great outfitting business in Canada. Those are tremendous waterfowl hunting opportunities. For those of you who'd like to go, you can check in on his website, www.seanmann.com, or call the office, 800-345-4539. Sean Mann Outdoors is home of the Eastern Shoreman Goose Call, world-famous goose call, as a matter of fact, from right here on Maryland's Eastern Shore, called the Eastern Shoreman. And you can see all the different varieties of the Eastern Shoreman and all the duck and goose calls from Sean Mann Outdoors on that website, seanmann.com, 800-345-4539. Maybe you can book a hunt, get some gear, or check out his line of calls. Sean Mann, SEANMANN.com.
The following is a paid announcement.
Governor O'Malley wants to enact laws that burden the right of self-defense for the law-abiding citizen. These restrictions will deny rights to those least able to afford them. The governor openly admits he wants to tax a civil right and make it a profit center for Maryland. The governor proposes laws that violate American values. His laws will not target criminals. His laws will only convert the lawful into criminals. The governor's penalties against law-abiding people will cause the loss of jobs, security clearances, and could even stop you from getting a mortgage. The governor's laws will subject active duty service members to prison time if they cannot register their firearms while serving overseas. They will subject young hunters to prison time for possessing common hunting ammunition. And you'll risk prison for not knowing to register a hunting firearm that the state previously approved you to own. Gun control helps no one. This message brought to you by Maryland citizens. Learn more at MarylandShallIssue.org.
This is Alan Ellis for Linex Spray-On Bedliners. Catonsville Linex and Bay Linex of Glen Burnie are proud to provide outstanding customer service just like their number one rated Linex spray-on bedliners with a nationwide lifetime warranty. A Linex spray-on bedliner completely seals out water, meaning no rust. It has a durable non-slip surface and is impervious to fuels and harsh chemicals, deer blood, crab juice, and it protects against impact and abrasion from tree stands and tools and all the other junk you carry in your truck bed. It's easy to clean at your local car wash, too. Catonsville Linex and Bay Linex of Glen Burnie now offer the new Linex Premium that looks better and lasts longer. Catonsville Linex is located at 5617 Baltimore National Pike, inside Beltway Exit 15A. Call 410-455-0800. That's 410-455-0800. Bay Linex of Glen Burnie is located at 400 Arundel Corporation Road, just off Beltway Exit 3A. Call 410-789-0199. That's 410-789-0199. Protect your investment, your pickup truck, like I did with a Linex spray-on bedliner.
All right, we're back. Barry Harden, you're up one more time. Banquet.
Yes, March 16th, Maryland State Chapter and Bottom Valley Branch holding their banquet in Westminster at the VFW. Go to MarylandQDMA.com for more information and to buy your tickets.
MarylandQDMA.com.
Spelled out.
Maryland, MarylandQDMA.com. If anybody has interest in the ticket that we talked about from the folks at Buck Bomb,